The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great Quest series of webinars on the labors of Hercules. This is going to be the first one of three on Hercules. Now, we're hoping that these webinars, part of our esoteric astrology module, should help you better understand the astrological signs and provide some insight as you're preparing your dark half of the year paper where you have to do an esoteric profile on a famous person. So, one of the things we want to look at first is why should we study the Hercules myth? Well, it's because the progress of a disciple is illustrated for us through the heavens. It shows us how Hercules proceeds through the zodiacal signs. And it's almost as if God had this, this plan and he put it in space for us. The progress, though, isn't just limited to disciples like Hercules. We can all better understand the lessons of each sign by reading about Hercules' journey. We all have every sign in our chart. Some signs are going to be better represented than others, but they all are there. We start out by learning about the lower expressions of each sign. And eventually, we begin to face the lessons that Hercules recapitulates for us in his symbolic journeys. The first four signs are actually preparatory in nature. In Aries, the soul took the type of matter that was necessary to enable it to relate to the world of ideas. It clothed itself in a mental sheath, adding the combination of mental substance through which it could best express itself, and man became a thinking soul. In Taurus, the desire world was contacted and a similar procedure pursued. The means of sentiently contacting the world of feeling and emotion were developed and man becomes a sentient soul. In Gemini, a new and vital energy body was constructed by the bringing together of the energies of soul and matter, and man became a living soul, for the two poles were in rapport, and the vital or etheric body came into being. In Cancer, the sign of physical birth and the identification of the unit with the masses, the work of incarnation was completed and the fourfold nature was manifested. Man became a living actor on the physical plane. Equipped with a controlled mind, the capacity to register illumination, the ability to contact his immortal aspect, and intuitively to recognize the kingdom of spirit, he is now ready for the greater work. I want to talk a little bit about the link between the myth and the sign. By combining the astrological and symbolic stories, the tests of everyday life of a disciple are shown to us, and that's through the sign in which the myth actually takes place. Each sign subjects the disciple to influences of certain distinctive forces and provides him with certain tendencies. For example, how the moon sign is going to tell us about our past patterns. The labor that Hercules went through for the sign that our moon is in is going to give us that clue to our past patterns and how they limit us. The same with our sun sign. The labor for our sun sign is going to describe our personality, our challenges, our strengths and our weaknesses from our personality. And the same is true with the ascendant sign. The labor of our ascendant sign is going to point to the soul qualities that we need to develop this life. So when we understand all of this, then the meaning of the test emerges and its implication for all of us in our journey, whether we're at the aspirant level or the disciple level. Aries labor, the first one, is the capture of the man-eating mares of Diomedes. All the labors of Hercules start this way, with Hercules facing the presiding one and or his teacher. In the foreword to Labors of Hercules, DK tells us that there are going to be variations on the myths. And of course, we know that depending on the different books that we read. In one case, we're told that Jupiter subjected Hercules to the power of Eurystheus, who was the ruler of Argos, and that Hercules had to obey his every demand for 12 years. Once completed, Hercules would then become a god. These, of course, are the 12 tests of man as he comes closer and closer to his true spiritual nature. Later in the book, DK refers to Eurystheus as Hercules' master. This could be interpreted as meaning he could be the head of an ashram or a senior disciple who was taking Hercules under his wing. The presiding one at the first two initiations, we're told in Initiation Human and Solar, is the Christ, who is the world teacher and head of the hierarchy. For the third and subsequent initiations, the presiding one is Sanat Kumara, the lord of the world and head of Shambhala. This is described for us pretty eloquently in the first couple of pages of The Labors of Hercules. Dim is the light at first, selfish the trend of human aspiration, and dark the deeds resultant. Slowly men learn, and in learning pass between the pillars of the gates time and again. Dull is the understanding, but in the halls of discipline, found in each section of the circle's cosmic sweep, the truth is slowly grasped, the needed lessons are learnt, the nature purified and taught until the cross is seen, that fixed and waiting cross which crucifies the sons of men, stretched out on the crosses of those who serve and save. From out of the mass of men, one man stood forth in ancient days and caught the great presiding elder's watching eye. He who was eternally presided within the council chamber of the Lord. He turned to one who stood close at hand and said, "Who is that soul upon the way of life whose light can now be dimly seen?" Quickly the answer came, "That is the soul who, on the way of life, experiences and seeks the clear light which shines from the high place. Let him proceed upon his way, but watch his steps." So Hercules is assigned a mentor, a teacher to watch and guide him as he completes his labors and he passes through the first great gate. And his first great act of service was begun. The son of Mars is Diomedes, and he ruled the land beyond the gate that Hercules just went through. he raised horses and mares of war upon the marshes of his land. The horses were wild and fierce, and men trembled at the sound. For they ravaged up and down the land, wrecking great damage, killing all the sons of men who crossed their path, and steadily breeding. Hercules was commanded to capture these mares and stop these evil deeds, to rescue the people and the land from the wild and evil mares. He wanted his good friend Abderus to go with him, so together they faced the task. They laid out their plans, they followed the horses, and they were able to corner and capture the mares and tether them. Hercules yelled out with successful joy, but then he left the horses in Abderus's care. It was beneath his dignity to hold them and drive them in. But Abderus was weak, and he feared the horses, and the horses knew that. He couldn't hold the mares or drive them through the gate. They turned on him and they killed him, escaping into the wilds again. Hercules was grief-stricken, discouraged, and very humbled by the experience. Yet he still had a duty to do. So he hunted and captured the mares the second time to fulfill that task. The teacher looked him over with care and sent the horses to a place of peace where they could be tamed and broken. The people of the land, released from fear, welcomed the deliverer, acclaiming Hercules as their savior of the land. But Abderus still lay dead. The teacher turned to Hercules and said, "Labor the first is ended. The task is done, but badly done. Learn the true lesson of this task, and then pass on to further service of your fellow men." And so the first labor started with partial failure, as is often the case with the inexperienced and impetuous aspirant. Okay, so what's the real meaning of this myth? Well, Aries is a sign of commencement. Cosmically speaking, it's the sign of creation. It marks the beginning of the first subjective, latent consciousness of existence and the start of the human cycle of experience. For aspirant to discipleship, it is the period of reorientation and renewed self-conscious effort, his start upon that final stage of the evolutionary path that carries him out of the human kingdom and enables him to make that transition into the kingdom of the gods. The first labor marks that first step upon the path. Aries is a sign of outgoing power, of streaming forth of divine energy from the central deity, God, or from the human being, a son of God. This energy streams forth in two directions, so the point becomes the line. It streams forth into the world of forms and also into the world of being or of spirit. It's one stream of energy and expresses the path of return or the inward going. And the two together constitute the two acts of the great circle of existence. In Aries, we start on the path and form is taken and the form dominates. It likewise begins the life of that inner unfoldment and the domination of the soul. Reorganization, reorientation, repolarization, and regeneration. The two uses of this force are dependent on mental attention of the being, whether it's divine or human, using that energy. It's the same force, but it's used in two different ways, dependent upon whether the divine user has focused his attention on the form taking or upon treading the path of liberation from the form. For eons, this life force had been applied to selfish ends, to self-gratification, and the satisfaction of desire, Little by little, form life loses its attraction until, having passed around and around the zodiacal wheel, man finds himself back again in Aries, only this time with a new focus, a fresh interest, and a different vision. He has held before him the promise that, having achieved certain objectives, he may cease from incarnation and attain the kingdom of the gods. He has learned his own essential duality. And he yearns to cease from satisfying those lower aspects and to meet the higher. He's beginning to respond to impulses coming from the soul and to vision group objectives. Aries governs the head, so it's consequently the sign of the thinker and a powerful mental sign. All beginnings originate on the mental plane and in the mind of the Creator, God, or the soul of man. The human family, the fourth kingdom in nature, came into being when mind emerged and differentiated man from animals. The aspirant begins his labors when he truly becomes the thinker in full awareness. In Aries, he learns right direction, right orientation, and the newly thinking disciple begins his work. The horse stands for intellectual activity. The white horse symbolizes the illumined mind of the spiritual man. Black horses represent the lower mind, with its false ideas, erring human concepts. The brood mares, such as we meet in this first labor, indicate the feminine aspect of the mind as it gives birth to ideas. The thought form making tendency of the mind is symbolized embodying the ideas conceived and which are then let loose upon the world, in this case devastating and destroying because it emanated from the lower mind, but it can also be constructive and saving when it comes from the soul. The exoteric ruler of Aries is Mars. So Hercules, acting under the right direction of thought and beginning his work on the mental plane, he takes the stand as the warrior, as a pioneering, militant spirit. The mares were in the possession of Diomedes, the son of Mars. But the esoteric ruler of Mercury, which illumines the mind and mediates between the soul and the personality, is Mercury. So the conquest of matter and the overcoming of illusion was Hercules' task, armed with hope, his untried divine equipment, and his trusty little personal club, and much enthusiasm, as starts all disciples. Hercules had to begin in the world of thought to gain mental control. For ages, the broodmares of thought had been breeding war horses, and through wrong thought, wrong speech, and erroneous ideas, were devastating the countryside. One of the very first things that every beginner on the path has to learn is the tremendous power that he mentally wields and the amount of harm that he can cause in his neighborhood and local environment through the broodmares of his mind. He has to learn the right use of the mind. He has to capture this feminine aspect of the mind and see to it that no more war horses are bred. Selfishness, unkindness, love of gossip, and criticism constitute a large part of our thought content. These are the broodmares of our mind, constantly fertilized by selfishness and illusion. They become parents of error, falseness, and cruelty, which have their origin in the lower aspects of our nature. Hercules realized the harm that these broodmares were doing. He rushed gallantly to the rescue. He determined to capture the mares, but he overestimated himself. He failed to realize their potency and strength, so he gave them to Abderus, the symbol of the lower personality, to hold. But Hercules, the soul, and Abderus, the personality, were both needed in unison to guard against these devastating horses. Abderus alone was not strong enough, and what had been happening to the people, it happened to Abderus. He was killed. This is an instance of the working of the great law, and we pay the price in our own natures of wrongly spoken words and ill-judged actions. Again, the soul, in the person of Hercules, had to deal with the problem of wrong thought, and only when he becomes a one-pointed aspirant in the sign Sagittarius and kills the man-eating birds does he really attain complete control of the thought process of his nature. Okay, let's quickly look at the summary. Aries is represented by the ram. It's a fire sign. Its quality is initiating. Will or power expresses itself through creative processes. In the early stages, activity are directed toward the material side of life. Later, towards the spiritual. Negative traits. Every sign has both negative and positive traits. Arrogance, stubbornness, impulsiveness, confrontational attitude, and a tendency to start projects but then leave them unfinished. Positive traits, courageous, lively, positive outlook, mental acumen, and an adventuresome spirit. The esoteric concepts are learning the right use of the mind and life force with unselfish intent and gaining control over wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. Aries is part of an axis, its polar opposite. On that same axis is Libra, which is an air sign, and it represents balance. The rulers, the exoteric ruler, as I said earlier, is Mars. The esoteric ruler is Mercury. Key words, from the angle of the form, let form again be sought. And from the angle of the soul, I come forth. And from the plane of mind, I rule. So, next we'll move on to the Taurus labor, where Hercules needs to capture the Cretan bull. So, again, he faces the presiding one, who spoke to the teacher. Where is the man who stood with power before the gods, received their gifts, and entered through the first wide open gate? He rests, O great presiding one, and ponders on his failure, and he mourns for Abderus, seeking help from within himself. It is well. The gifts of failure guarantee success when rightly understood. Let him proceed to labor once again. And enter the second gate. So a sad Hercules slowly passed between the second gate into the light shining from the sacred bull. No instructions were given as to how he was to complete this task, and all that he knew was that the bull was sacred, that it was born from the sea, and that its destiny was to be offered in sacrifice to Minos, king of Crete. Hercules traveled to Crete and searched all over the island, pursuing the bull from place to place in the great maze, guided by the light shining from the forehead, until at last he cornered the bull. In the shining light, he rode the bull across the water to the city of the Cyclops. Seven sisters were singing and urging him on in his journey, and three Cyclops, who were great sons of God, awaited him at the holy place, watching his progress. "He comes with strength," said Brontes, and went to meet him on the shore. "He rides in light," said Steropes. "His inner light will brighter be." "He comes with speed," said Argus. "He is riding through the waves." And Hercules drew near, urging the sacred bull upon the way, throwing the light upon the trail. When he returned home, the teacher said, "Hey, you came home with empty hands." And Hercules says, "I have these empty hands because I fulfilled the task. What's next?" His teacher told him, "Within the light you shall see light. Walk in light and see light. Your light must brighter shine." Later, the teacher turned to Hercules and said, "Your second labor is performed, and easy was the task. Learn from this task the lesson of proportion. Strength to perform the arduous tasks, and a willingness to do the tasks which tax not your very powers. Those are the two lessons learned." Now, the eye of the bull in Taurus, it's the magnificent fixed star Aldebaran. It's one of the reasons why this constellation is regarded as conferring illumination. In ancient times, it was called the leading star of the heavens, and Taurus has always been connected with light, and therefore with Christ, who proclaimed himself as the light of the world. Light, illumination, sound, these are the creative force, and the three basic ideas connected with the constellation Taurus. The consummation of the work that is undertaken in Taurus and the result of the Taurian influence is the glorification of matter and subsequent illumination. All that prevents the glory of the soul's radiance is the matter or the form aspect. When that has been consecrated, purified, and spiritualized, then the glory and the light can indeed shine through. Okay, so what exactly was the meaning of this particular myth? In line with the universal law, Hercules began his work on the mental plane. In the working out of the creative plan, thought impulse is followed by desire. That state of consciousness we call mental is succeeded by the state of sensitivity, the desire world and its potency. So the key to the labor in Taurus is the right understanding of the law of attraction that governs the magnetic force and the principle of coherence, which builds the forms through which God or a soul manifest. It produces the stability, creating persistence of the form, and concerns the interrelation between the builder and the form itself, between positive and negative, spirit and matter, the self and the not-self, between all opposites. The soul eventually learns to ride the form, controlling and mastering it. It will recognize the relation that should hold other human beings, spouse, siblings, friends, strangers, close to us. Through the right use of the form and right understanding of purpose, Through right orientation and right relationships, we learn to use this spiritual energy, with the soul acting as the controlling factor, and the whole body will then become full of light. Through control, through the use of common sense, and by identification with group purpose, the disciple arrives at liberation from the control of sex. He will succeed in following the example of Hercules and will ride the bull of desire over the mainland, where in the temple of God, he will hand it over into the care of the Cyclops, who are early initiates, having the eye of Shiva. They've got that bull's eye in the middle of their forehead. For Hercules himself was not only the disciple, but he was, in his lower nature, the bull, and in his higher nature, the Cyclops. When the bull of desire has been handed over to the Cyclops, the initiate with that single eye, which represents the soul, and the three divine aspects will begin to manifest in him. Brontes means thunder, and it's the symbol of the first aspect of God, the Father who spoke, and the creative sound came forth. Steropes means lightning or light, and it's that second aspect, the aspect of the soul. Argus means whirling activity, and it's the third aspect of divinity, expressing itself in the intense activity of the physical plane life. So these divine aspects constitute the controlling factor, and once they've gained possession in the sacred bull, then the problem of Hercules is solved. Now, let's talk a little bit about the disciple and sex. All aspirants contend with the problem of sex. Self-indulgence and the control of the human being by any part of his organism are always going to be inevitably wrong. When he recognizes his physical function as a divine heritage, and his equipment as having been given him for the good of the group and to be rightly used for the benefit of the human family, such as procreation, then we'll see a new motivating impulse underlying the human conduct where sex is concerned. Matter will no longer be prostituted to selfish desire, and the relation between the sexes will be governed by understanding of divine purpose and skill in action. The soul must control and not our lower natures. Disciples like Hercules consider themselves a separated unit, divided from the mainland, which is the symbol of the group. And they're divided through illusion in a maze in which we live. The bull has to be caught and mastered and chased from one point to another in the life of the separated self until the time comes when the aspirant can do what Hercules succeeded in doing and ride that bull. To ride an animal in ancient myths signifies control. The bull is not slaughtered. It is ridden and guided under the mastery of the man, under the mastery of the soul. So let's look at the nature of the tests. The broad lesson that we learned with this sign is to achieve right understanding of the law of attraction and right use and control of matter. The aspirant is tested in two ways. First, as to the caliber of his animal nature and the motives underlying it. And second, he's tested as to the attraction which the great illusion can exert over him. Maya, or the great illusion, and sex are but two aspects of the same force, that of attraction. One, as it manifests on the physical plane, and the other as it expresses itself in the field of the emotional desire nature. These are potencies and faculties in all human beings. And some suggestions for controlling them are to ride, control, and master that bull. And let the aspirant remember that the bull has to be ridden across the waters to the mainland, has to join the group, which means he subordinates his separated personal island self to group purpose and endeavor and begins to rule his life by what becomes best for the group and not his personal separated self. He needs to use common sense, use the mind, and through the medium of intelligent perception, guide and control the bull of desire. This doesn't mean there should be complete abstinence of sex. That's not only unhealthy, but remember, its divine purpose is procreation. Many physically clean people have unclean minds. A clean mind and a pure heart, a rightly organized and used physical body, conform to the law of the land in which our destiny puts us. So its consideration for the welfare of those with whom we're associated, plus a life of loving service, those are the ideals for all aspirants. And then a right understanding of the meaning of celibacy. The word actually means single, and true celibacy has been expressed for us in the words of Christ when he told us long ago, "If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light." Okay, so here's a summary of Taurus. It's represented by the bull, and it's an earth sign. Quality is desire for the masses of men, but it's will or directed purpose for the disciple. The negative traits can be stubborn, self-indulgent, lazy, materialistic, and possessive. Mine, 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 mine. You hear that all the time. Positive traits, dependability, practicality, patience, independence, and persistence. The esoteric concepts is illumination and applying knowledge and experience towards spiritual aspirations, the wish to overcome the baser desires by transmitting them into love for humanity. Polar opposite is Scorpio, which is a water sign. The rulers of Taurus are Venus exoterically and Vulcan esoterically. The key words from the angle of the form, let struggle be undismayed. And from the angle of the soul, I see, and when the eye is opened, all is illumined. And now for the Gemini labor, which is finding the golden apples of Hesperides. And there we go again, the great presiding one. He's watched the labors of the Son of Man, who is also the Son of God. So he and the teacher saw the third great gate opening before the Son of Man, revealing a new chance to tread the path. So Hercules was given his marching orders. And then he asked his teacher, I seek the apples and I need them quickly for my use. Show me the quickest way and I'll be on my way. Not so fast, replied the teacher. The way is long. Two things alone I will confide to you, and then it is for you to prove the truth of what I say. Remember that the sacred tree is guarded well. Three maidens cherish the tree, protecting the fruit, and a dragon with 100 heads protects the maidens. So guard yourself well, and the search will carry you where five tests will meet you on your way. Each will afford you the scope for wisdom, understanding, and the skill and opportunity. Watch well, I fear, my son, that you will fail to recognize these points upon the way. But time alone will show. Godspeed. So it begins. With confidence, Hercules goes forth, sure of himself, his wisdom, and his strength, and he searched north, but didn't find the tree. He continued searching. The teacher, watching from afar, sent Nereus to see if he could help Hercules. Nereus tried a variety of subtle ways to help, but Hercules failed to understand and ignored Nereus. So Hercules actually failed the first of these five lesser tests to this labor. Hercules turned to the south, the dark place, to look. It's our past, and it's here that the symbol of going back into the world, the opposite pole of spirit. Hercules, still dreaming of that quick success with his labor, he meets Antaeus, the serpent, and wrestles with him. Thinking he is near, Hercules hopes his strength will overcome his opponent and he can reach the apples. But he can't beat Antaeus, and he asks himself why. Trying one more thing, with all his might, he grasped the serpent with both hands and lifted Antaeus high in the air. He could not overcome it when it was earthbound. He had to overcome the physical and lift it into the air to defeat it. Gemini is an air sign. It's a mutable sign. And glamour takes a variety of forms there in matter. Appearance, but not reality. And so for Hercules, the second of those minor tests had actually been passed. Confident, he goes on, renewed with courage, and turns to look in the west, where, disaster. Astrologically, the west is the right half of our chart, with due west being the descendant or the seventh cusp. This is the significant other in our mundane marriage or the divine marriage, and here it represents Busiris. He's a great arch deceiver, son of the waters and close in kin to Poseidon. He brings delusion to the sons of men through the world of seemingly wisdom, claiming to know the right truth. Hercules bought it completely, looking for that easy way, and he became trapped for a year to this false teacher. He grew weaker and weaker until one day Busiris chains Hercules to an altar. When Hercules tries to break his bounds, he couldn't do it because he was so weak. And then he recalled something that Nereus told him long ago, that the truth and strength lies within himself. So he's finally able to break his bonds. He seizes Busiris and chains him to the altar. So he passed this part of the test, finally realizing the importance of what Nereus had told him. He resumes his search for the apples, chastened but wiser, and suddenly he hears a cry of distress. So he's already behind in the search. He has to seriously think about what he wants to do now and what another delay is going to cost him. But another cry for help comes, and so Hercules springs into action, and he speeds to his brother's help. It was Prometheus chained to the rock with vultures eating his liver, slowly killing him. So Hercules frees Prometheus, chases the vultures off, and he tends to the wounds. The watching teacher, silent up to this point, finally spoke to Hercules, and he says, "The fourth stage on the way is past. There has been no delay. The rule upon the chosen path, which hastens everyone's success, is learn to serve." So Hercules again resumes his search, but still, so far, no tree, no apples, and he's getting worn and weary from all of his travels. He hears from a passing pilgrim of a distant mountain in the east where the tree can be found. Astrologically, the east is the left half of our chart, with due east being the ascendant, that first house cusp, and the purpose of our soul. So he heads that way and he sees his goal, imagining his success at last. But again, he's arrested by a sense of distress. Hercules sees Atlas struggling under the load of the world on his back, clearly in agony. Forgetting his search, Hercules rushes forward and removes the load from Atlas's shoulders, puts it on himself. And in shouldering his brother's burden, the load rode off and both men stood free. Before him stood the grateful giant, apples in hand, offering them with love to Hercules. The three sisters were also there with more apples, telling him the way to the apples is always through service. Before he left, Hercules returned the apples for those who follow him on the journey. Returning home, his teacher congratulated him and immediately sent him out on his next labor. Okay, but before we can move on to the next labor, we want to explore the meaning of the myth. First, we actually go through a mystical stage, going inward for long periods of time, as was represented in part in this labor. And then we become ready for the occult phase. And what we learn here is that mystic must add both the occult knowledge and the achievement in his life. He can't remain a spiritual recluse. As the mystic, he learned to listen to that inner guide, but as the occultist, he has to gain knowledge through his five senses, opening up to new and greater awareness of his surroundings and his place in him. He becomes a man of action who is learning to transmute knowledge into wisdom. He needs to apply this wisdom to the problems he encounters in his life. This teaches him to integrate his lower self into his higher self. First, he becomes a very strong personality, but that personality is flawed and selfish. He has to learn to conquer glamour and illusion, which was represented by Busiris in this labor, and then become selfless in his action. Despite his failures and long delays, he did eventually obtain that wisdom, but only after giving up his personal search in selfless service. The apples, like in the Garden of Eden, symbolically represent knowledge of duality, good and evil, the pull of opposites, nature of the soul, and the form. In his search for the apples on the physical plane, Hercules had to conquer glamour and illusion. For through spiritual aspiration, the disciple is very apt to be taken in by astralism and lower psychism. We see this in the myth as Hercules is facing Busiris, and he's completely deceived by him, isn't he? The tests of glamour and illusion dispelled, he was able to continue his search. But then he found delay with Prometheus. But remember what his teacher told him. There really was no delay because serving and helping others hastens our progress. And then came the final test to help Atlas. Hercules is so overwhelmed by Atlas's suffering that he forgets his search completely. and in that self-forgetfulness, he passed the real test. So we see that his progress was at first subjective, characterized by a lot of thought and desire. We saw this work out for him, as it does for all of us on the physical plane, until he learned about himself as a personality. This is a stage we all go through. Then he begins to truly gather the apples of knowledge. He recognizes the duality of man, the personality versus the soul, and he learns to subordinate the personality to the soul. He does this by getting his three lower vehicles under control: the body, his desire nature, and his mind. Then he consciously develops the soul nature, the higher aspects. He looks for clarity in perception that's no longer clouded by glamour or delusion. He cultivates love for all people and the wisdom to discern the soul in others. He actively becomes involved in service to humanity. And so we see the summary of Gemini, the twins. It's an air sign. Remember, he had to lift the Antaeus up into the air. Duality, love, wisdom, fluidity, control of every pair of opposites. It's the underlying love of deity reached in our solar system through Gemini. Negative traits: inconsistent, superficial, indecisive, lack of focus, and nervous. But the positive traits: versatile, enthusiastic, eloquent, intellect. The esoteric concepts: the intermediary between the soul and the body, depicted as the mortal and immortal twin. The dual aspect of the mind, as it mediates between the higher in the lower mind. Its polar opposite on the same axis is Sagittarius, which is a fire sign. The rulers of Gemini, exoterically Mercury and esoterically Venus, the lower mind and the higher mind. Keywords from the angle of form: let instability do its work. And from the angle of the soul: I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. Okay, and this is our fourth myth. The Cancer labor is to capture the golden doe, or hind. So, as with all the other ones, he faces the presiding one, who's sitting within the council chamber of the Lord. And he's talking to Hercules' teacher. Where is the Son of Man, who is the Son of God? How fares he? How is he tested, and with what service is he now engaged? And the teacher, casting his eye upon Hercules, says, "Not at this time, O great presiding one. The third great test provided much of teaching sustenance to a learner such as he." He ponders and reflects. So the presiding one tells him to find a test that will evoke wisest choice. Send him to labor in a field where he must decide which voice of all the many will arouse the obedience of his heart. Provide a test of great simplicity upon the outer plane, and a test that's going to awaken on the inner side of life the fullness of his wisdom and rightness of his power to choose. And so he heads out. He stands in deep silence, observing the landscape around him. He sees the shrine of Apollo, and on a nearby hill, the fawn that he's hunting. As he watched, he heard the voice of Artemis, goddess of the moon, warning him that the doe belonged to her and he was not to touch it. Then Diana, goddess of the forest, claimed the doe, and the two of them started arguing back and forth, each of them claiming possession of the doe. Hercules, still standing between the pillars of the gate, listened to their quarrel, wondering about the two maidens. And then he heard another commanding voice telling him that the doe belonged to no one. It belonged to the shrine. So he listened to this new voice, and he was instructed to rescue the doe. So Hercules started on his journey. Artemis and Diana watched him and hampered his kept hampering his hunt whenever he got close. They deluded him. They tried to throw him off as he chased the doe from point to point. For a year, he followed this doe from place to place, catching glimpses of it only to find nothing time after time. But finally he found it, weary and sleeping beside a pool of water in the forest. He quietly crept up and shot an arrow, hitting the doe's foot, wounding it. He picked the doe up in his arms and held it close to his heart, while Artemis and Diana watched. He cried in exultation that the doe was his, but then he heard that other voice, the voice of the teacher, reminding him that the doe belonged to no one and commanding him to carry it to the shrine. Hercules wanted to know why, when the doe was his and it was carried close to his heart, and the teacher told him as a son of God, he dwelled within the shrine of God and needed to bring the doe there for everyone else who shared the shrine. So Hercules takes the doe to the holy shrine of Mykenae, but he had second thoughts, because remember, the doe's his prize. Another argument ensued with Artemis and Diana, and all three claiming the doe again, until Apollo, the sun god, spoke from the holy place, claiming the doe for the holy shrine. Why, asked Artemis, can Hercules enter the temple, but Diana and I can't, even when he has killed the doe? And Apollo told her that it was because Hercules bore the doe in his arms, close to his heart, and left the doe in the holy place for others to share. Hercules, returning from the test, passed through the gate again and found his way back to his teacher. He tells the teacher the task was fulfilled and it was actually simple except for the length of time needed. He said the doe was in the holy place close to the heart of God, but also close to Hercules' own heart. Go look again, O Hercules, my son, between the pillars of the gate, said his teacher. And sure enough, beyond the gate on a hill, stood a new fawn. Hercules, puzzled, asked why the fawn was back. This time it was the presiding one who answered him. Again and yet again must all the sons of men, who are the sons of God, seek for the golden antlered fawn and bear it to the holy place. Again and yet again. So, what we know is that Cancer is the last of these four preparatory signs. Being equipped with the faculty of mind in Aries, he learns mental control, and then he learns desire in Taurus, and his spiritual light begins to grow there. And then he arrives at the realization of his essential duality in Gemini, recognizes the two parts of himself, and then he's birthed in Cancer into the human kingdom. So Cancer is a mass sign, and the influences bring about the formation of the human family, race, nation, the family unit. For aspirants, these four signs prepare his equipment and show him how to use it properly. In Cancer, he gets the first touch of that more universal sense, which is the higher aspect of the mass consciousness. Equipped with a controlled mind, the capacity to register illumination, and ability to contact his immortal aspect, and to intuitively recognize the kingdom of spirit. With those things, he's now ready for the greater work. Three words summarize the self-awareness of consciousness in evolving human beings: instinct, intellect, and intuition. Cancer is predominantly the sign of instinct, but instinct has to be lifted up, and when it has been transcended and transmuted, it manifests as intuition, which was symbolized in the myth by the doe. The intermediate stage is that of the intellect. Hercules in Cancer needed to develop his intuition and to become familiar with that instantaneous recognition of truth and reality, which is our higher perspective. So he was sent to capture the doe, which is something that's elusive and difficult to secure. And there is no success for the aspirant until he has transmuted instinct via intellect into intuition. Then instinct becomes subordinated to both. There's no sharp distinction between the various aspects of man's nature, instinct, intellect, and intuition. They're all just varying aspects of consciousness and of response to environment and to the world in which the human being finds himself. Instinct is the consciousness of the form and the mode of awareness of the form. Artemis, the moon, rules the form. Man is also rational, and he can analyze, criticize, and he possesses a mind. And that faculty of intellectual perception and response opens him up to new fields of awareness. Diana, the huntress, claimed the doe because she knew the doe is intellect and man is the great seeker, the great hunter before the Lord. But the doe had another more elusive form, and Hercules, as the aspirant, also looked for this. For a life cycle, we're told he was hunted, represented as a year in this myth. Finally, he caught and followed his spiritual intuition, carried it into the temple, where it was claimed by the sun god Apollo. We're told that the battle is still going on between Apollo, who knew it was the doe of intuition, Diana, who thought it was intellect, and Artemis, who thought it was only instinct. The problem of all disciples is to use the instinct correctly, in its right place, and in its proper way. He must learn to use the intellect, and through it become conscious of the world of human ideas and research, and he must learn to carry that capacity into the temple of the Lord, and there to transmute it to intuition. And through intuition, he becomes aware of things of the spirit, of those spiritual realities which neither instinct nor intellect can reveal to him. And so we come to the summary of Cancer, the crab, which is a water sign. Quality, mass sensitivity for average man, mass identification with form. For the disciple, it's service for the masses. The negative traits: moody, too clingy, over-emotional, suspicious. Positive traits, imagination, intuition, loving, compassion, and protectiveness. The esoteric concepts, developing intuition and a sensitive response to our environment and the conditions we find ourselves, the circumstances around us. Psychic development of both the lower and the higher senses and transmuting instinct to intuition and emotional reactions to inclusive love. The polar opposite on the same axis is Capricorn, which is an earth sign. The rulers of Cancer, exoterically, the moon, the form, esoterically, Neptune. Keywords from the angle of the form, let isolation be the rule, and yet the crowd exists. From the angle of the soul, I build a lighted house, and therein dwell. And there we have it. We've just covered the first four preparatory signs. Equipped with the mind in Aries, desire in Taurus, arrives at his essential duality in Gemini and enters the human kingdom in Cancer. Okay, our next webinar in this series is going to be the one covering the four signs of the physical plane struggle. So I hope to see you there. Good night, everyone.